We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview. The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Tuesday, November 26th, and less than 2 months before Donald Trump takes the oath of office, and the transition team is well underway in attempting to fulfill the mandate from the American people. And part of that is taking over the U.S. military and just ridding all federal agencies, including the U.S. military, of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And according to the Populist Times, Trump is set to fire 15,000 transgender troops from the U.S. military immediately after inauguration. This new report says that Donald Trump will fire all the transgender soldiers immediately after taking office. It's estimated the move would rid the military of at least 15,000 service members. The Times reported that they would be medically discharged, which would determine that they were unfit to serve. So joining me to discuss all this and more is our good friend, Father Frank Pavone, who is the founder of Priests for Life and is one of the greatest advocates for simply standing up for the truth, which is there are only two genders. You can't trans. And so I think this is a great move.
Well, hello, Jenna. Yeah, it's good to be with you. You know, I've seen very, very shortly ago, various conflicting reports about this particular story. You know, we're going to have obviously President Trump's people clarify exactly what is or isn't going to happen here. But I think that's what's important here, as you're saying, our commitment to the truth, is to consider this from a broad perspective. It's like, you know, people may want to deceive themselves. A man may want to deceive himself into saying that he's a woman, or vice versa. Okay, that's one thing. But I think the line that we have to draw here is that, number one, not only should we be forced to acknowledge such an obvious falsehood, which is, you know, about as false as saying one and one is three, but that number two, when you start to talk about positions in society, what is that quote unquote transition? How is that going to affect the lives and well-being of other people? And obviously serving in the military is intersects quite heavily with the well-being of other people. And I think that's what is at the core of this whole argument, which, you know, no matter what, you know, the exact details are of what the Trump team is or isn't going to do, the question is, you know, in any profession, whether you're, you know, an air traffic controller or a plumber, an electrician, what is the impact going to be on the rest of us who have absolutely nothing to do with that individual's autonomous liberty to think and identify him or herself whatever way they want? And I think that's worth serious consideration by people on all sides of this issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is way more than just the federal government or the military. I mean, talking about these transgender policies or DEI as a whole, diversity, equity, inclusion, this is something that I would say is now systemic within American culture, and we need to start rooting it out. And part of this mandate, I think, is also a cultural one. It's not just a governmental one, that voters across America and American citizens, when we we are responsible not just for our civil government, but also for our culture, are saying that, you know, we want to get back to just common sense and reality. And there was another headline this morning that it came from Fox News saying that Walmart, the big superstore chain, it rolls back their DEI policies, becoming the latest U.S. firm to join a growing trend. So Walmart joins Ford, John Deere, Toyota, and other major companies in ditching their controversial DEI initiatives. And Elon Musk reposted this and said, "The tide has turned." I hope that that's true for the U.S.
I think it's true. I think we are seeing time and time again signs that we are winning this cultural battle. It's just gone too far for so many Americans. And people are, of course, the companies might not be having a moral or spiritual conversion. They might just be able to, you know, count the dollars and realize that, you know, customers are turned off. You will go to a supermarket, you want a good product. You know, you want the right kind of food. You want the right kind of household products. You don't want DEI ideology shoved in your face. That's not what you want. Now, if you do want that, there's plenty of places to go to get it. But I think we're realizing that, you know, whether it's advertising for companies that are trying to provide a quality product, or installing people in positions, or even in positions of government, or even in the judiciary, you know, or even in the White House. Look at what I mean. The choice by Biden of Kamala Harris, which of course proved to be a disastrous choice, was a DEI choice. He said so. And so shouldn't it instead be the qualifications of the person to do the job? And that's part of the common sense, like you're saying, that we need to be abiding by in every sphere of life.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's amazing how common sense always is consistent with biblical values and with truth. And, you know, as Christians, we can certainly say, well, the reason for that, of course, is because God created. And so when we look at natural law, we look at the natural universe around us, then obviously when we look at reality and we are consistent with what our Creator told us and what He showed us and what is self-evident, then we can rationally see what follows. And it's only when we try to go against that and when we have all of these other ridiculous ideas of recreating and reinventing reality in our own image or something that we would like to do, which is exactly what the Marxist, socialist, communist left tried to do, then you get into all of these irrational things like that men can become women and that somehow, you know, men need to be sharing women's bathrooms in the Capitol. I mean, even that, like there was a Democrat senator, Tammy Duckworth, just yesterday that came out saying that she thought that it was disgusting that a so-called trans woman who's obviously just a man wouldn't be able to share women's bathrooms in the Capitol. I'm thinking, how far have we come as a culture that a sitting United States senator can actually say that with a straight face and argue?
Right.
Argue that. I mean, and I hope that we are coming back to reality when there is so much pressure now on senators like that and on the left to just say, can you know, the emperor has no clothes. I mean, come on. This is absolutely absurd that you're actually arguing this.
Well, you know, Jenna, you've heard me say this. I've said this all over the country. I have a theory about what the answer to that question is. How is it that we have a U.S. senator who's saying this? How is it that we have a Supreme Court justice who couldn't define what a woman was in her confirmation hearing? I think the answer is this. We have been training ourselves in this insanity for 50 years by pretending that a baby in the womb is actually a baby only if you choose that that's a baby. A pro-choice. I'm going to choose that this is a baby. I'm going to keep the baby and protect the baby. But if I don't choose to do that, it's perfectly okay to dismember that child. It's perfectly okay to pretend that child isn't even human, that baby doesn't even exist. I'm not even going to call it a baby. Wait a minute. It's not up to us whether that baby is a baby. It's not up to our choice whether a man is a man. It's not up to us whether a woman is a woman. That's the root. Now, once we uprooted that with Roe v. Wade. And I think the fact that now the courts have rejected Roe and the courts have rejected also this godless, the lemon test with religious freedom, you know, this ridiculous idea that we can't have religious expression in a diverse and free society. maybe we're starting to turn the corner. We're starting to turn the corner judicially. We're starting to turn the corner politically with this incredible 2024 election. We're starting to turn the corner culturally, as you've pointed out in a few ways. And then there are still these remnants. There are these people who double down and say, you know, buying into this insanity. Well, I think we're seeing a sifting out. We're seeing a sifting out. We're seeing, you know, the middle is being cleared. In other words, people who are ambivalent now, people are either saying, you know what, this whole thing is ridiculous, and I'm going to start speaking up. And then the radical crazies are just going to keep doubling down on their insanity. But it's good that we have that division. Get out of the middle. And the more people who get out of the middle and stop, being ambiguous and ambivalent, no, take a stand. That's why I always say, Jenna, you know, people shouldn't be afraid that there's division. Just be concerned that you're on the right side of it. And that is the key to getting out of this insanity.
Yeah, 100%. I could not agree more. And this is why conservatives, this is our time to stand up and extend the mandate to these other issues that are simply fundamental reality and fundamental truth, like a life and when life begins, and that a child and a human being is a human being from the moment of conception all the way until natural death. And it doesn't change its identity and somehow magically become a person just when we decide that somehow a personhood attaches or all of these other ridiculous arguments. I was watching an Instagram post from Charlie Kirk last night, Frank Pavone, my special guest this morning, and he had a great argument because he was asking this college student, and they were having this exchange, and this college student was saying, well, you know, and he was asking, you know, what is a woman? And this college student was saying, well, you know, if a person is fully transitioned, or, you know, if they're mimicking the gender of the opposite sex, then they've started their transition. And he honed in on that term mimic and said, yeah, people can pretend to be something that they're not, but that doesn't make them something different in reality. And he used the example that a lot of college students know, where he said, you know, if a 17-year-old can mimic an older person and can pretend that they're 21 and go out and buy a beer, does that make them 21? And the college student just sat back and kind of got this smirk and was like, oh, you got me there, because everybody knows that you can pretend to be something that you're not. And just like all of these issues that the left is trying to pretend that, you know, a child that's in the womb isn't a person, or that a man can become a woman, or any of these things, they know that it's fake. And they know that that's not grounded in reality. But I still think we have a long way to go from this kind of populist movement that is somehow still thinking maybe we'll support, you know, Bruce Jenner, who, it, you know, goes by Caitlyn, which is a false mimicking, for governor of California. I mean, that's ridiculous. Just because he claims to be a Republican doesn't mean that we should support someone who clearly isn't living in reality.
Yeah, we've got to make all our choices consistent with the reality that we perceive by common sense. This is a crucial time, and you know, implementing all of this and trying to get further down the road of these cultural victories and policy victories. You know, Jen, I did want to say, in relation to all this, we are obviously in an important time. You started off the segment talking about, you know, we're less than 2 months away from President Trump taking the oath of office again. This is a crucial 2 months for America. Just like this election has been the most important, so this transition is the most important, because it's hot and heavy. It's a lot of tension. There's a lot of quick activity. A lot of quick decisions have to be made, and we have to pray for the Holy Spirit's guidance. I was talking recently with some people on the transition team, and I said, Holy Spirit, you know, the God of enlightenment and discernment, we're praying for you. And I think all of us need to do that. In fact, I've written a special prayer guide for the transition. And if folks want to go to my website, endabortion.us, they could sign up on the email thing. They could sign up, and I'll send them this prayer guide. Each day, a different prayer about a different aspect of this transition, because it all impacts what we're talking about. It impacts the culture battle. It impacts the policy battle. And we've got to just pray that these 2 months are very, very clothed in God's grace for everybody involved.
So well said, and I think you're absolutely right that that is the action item, especially on this week, the week of Thanksgiving. We need to express our thanks to the Lord that He has given us the grace that extended to us in America to have the next 4 years under Donald Trump instead of Kamala Harris. And then we need to pray for His continued favor and for the boldness and the courage to stand up as Christians, as conservatives in this time, and continue to push for pro-truth policy, not just pro-Republican or pro-conservative. We always need to be pro-truth. So what a wise admonition from Father Frank Pavone. Thanks so much, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then, they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Back, and we are talking about President Trump's transition, and he is less than 2 months away from taking the oath of office for the second time. And Reuters had a really ridiculous headline, I'll just put it that way. Trump's candidate picks, some firsts included, but diversity down from Biden. Yes, they are focused so much on diversity that they are actually ridiculing Trump's picks because they think diversity is down, as if that matters. But let's bring on our good friend Dinesh D'Souza, who is a host, the host of the Dinesh D'Souza Show on Salem Media. And Dinesh, I don't know about you, but I really don't care about diversity. And I really think that it's a good thing that Trump has said that diversity, equity and inclusion just needs to be gone from government agencies.
Yes, I agree completely. The notion that we should have a cabinet, for example, that, quote, looks like America, makes absolutely no sense. We want a cabinet that that looks out for the interest of Americans, that reflects Trump's agenda, that comes up with good ideas. That's a bunch of smart people. Now, in one respect, the cabinet is somewhat diverse, and that is ideologically. You know, you've got, when you have figures like Tulsi Gabbard, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., even the unique role being played by Elon Musk, you don't have a group of people that all thinks the same. I think it's even the case that, for example, Tulsi Gabbard and Marco Rubio are two very different people and will bring different angles on foreign policy. But you need that kind of balance, I think, in presenting options to Trump.
Yeah, I absolutely agree on that. And it's a good thing to have those different perspectives. And that was what, for example, we wished that Trump would have paid attention to more during, for example, the COVID response, to have more of a diversity of opinion and to say, you know, rather than just going with the Fauci and Burks sort of recommendations, but to say, oh, maybe let's listen to Dr. Jay Bhattacharya or Dr. Atlas. And so, you know, you can see from this example, listeners can see that, you know, sometimes having a diversity of opinion can be a good thing when when you're working on solutions. But in terms of what the left always calls diversity and what they focus on, which is always identity politics rather than merit, that's what I completely agree with Trump needs to be excised from all of the government agencies, but also from culture. And so, Dinesh, but turning back to Trump's overall picks, what is your view overall on his cabinet so far? Because we've gotten, of course, mixed reaction. Yeah, well, the left will never be happy. But so let's talk about people who actually voted for Trump, which is the majority of our listeners, and the American people, of course, who gave Trump and the transition team this mandate to stop government waste, to return to America First policies, and your view overall of his cabinet picks so far.
Yeah, I think that there's a completely different strategy and tone from 2016. In 2016, it appeared that Trump came in with the idea that he was an outsider who needed to make peace with the establishment. And Trump also thought that, you know, you might have bias in the media or in Hollywood. But he trusted the people in the white coats. He thought, gee, you know, if I'm getting advice from Fauci, who's been around since the days of Reagan, it's going to be objective. I can trust those guys. He did not know that the rot, the ideological rot, the political corruption had seeped into many areas of government that went way beyond the kind of the usual suspects. I think this time around, what Trump is doing is he is appointing people that are going to sort of take a hatchet to the Biden-Harris regime. They're going to take a hatchet to the Biden-Harris regime on the border policies. They're going to undo a lot of the bad stuff that those people have done to America. And they're going to do it with a kind of ruthlessness and determination of a kind that we haven't seen, certainly not in Trump's first term. And I think that's what people voted for. So when you see people like Adam Schiff saying, well, you know, people just voted for lower grocery prices. No, that's not actually the case. Trump campaigned very explicitly on the fact that he's going to change the way that government is organized. Now, will he be able to do it is another question, but I think that he's setting about it with a determination that is pretty impressive.
I absolutely agree with you. And one of my favorite ruthless comments so far is Tom Homan, who is Trump's border czar, saying that he's laying down the law on, for example, the Denver mayor and some of these other state level bureaucrats who are saying that they are going to protect their sanctuary city policies in the face of federal government trying to actually enforce the law and have these kinds of mass deportations. And Tom Homan saying about the Denver mayor, I'm willing to put him in jail. I mean, this is the type of thing that I think in 2016, the people wanted to see this kind of, you know, blunt force action and didn't see it necessarily as fulfilled in the way that perhaps they had wanted and voted for. But I think that Trump is very serious this time around. And so so with respect, you know, to the border, I think we are going to see a lot of action in the first day and 100 days, certainly. But what, Dinesh, about the more controversial picks, like, for example, the cabinet picks that include, you know, the Treasury Secretary and some of these others that the MAGA world isn't so keen on?
Well, the Treasury Secretary pick, I think, is a very good guy. This guy is, you know, you need to have somebody who's a real money guy for the Treasury. I mean, our economic situation is bad. Vivek Ramaswamy put it very simply when he compared the United States to a guy who is, you know, earning $100,000 a year, maybe netting about 80 after taxes and spending about $120,000 every year. So this is a formula for just going off the economic precipice. And I think that there needs to be some way of tackling the fact that the government takes in $3.5 trillion a year and spends over $5 trillion. This was supposed to be a one-time ratchet during COVID, but under Biden and Harris, they just decided to normalize this kind of higher level of government spending, and it is beyond reckless. So what solution there is to this problem, I'm not really sure because, well, one solution, of course, is to cut the size of government. Another, of course, is to stimulate economic growth. So these are the kinds of things that Trump is going to have to figure out through the Treasury pick.
And so does Scott Bessent's alleged connection to George Soros and taking money from him, does that concern you in terms of this pick?
Actually, it doesn't. And the reason is this. I know of at least one other prominent conservative. You might have heard about the hedge fund billionaire Stan Druckenmiller. This guy is a right-winger. He is longtime Republican. You know, you have to realize that Soros, when he started out, he was kind of the guru of currency trading and the guru of commodities. And so you had a lot of young, brilliant guys come up, and they were part of the Soros orbit. Now, they were not part of the Soros ideological orbit. Soros in the beginning was not really a left-wing activist. I think what happened is as Soros made more and more money, maybe his ideological schemes became more, you know, appealing to him, or he really became what he is now, this kind of philanthropist, slash satanic evil strategist. But that's not the Soros that tutored Bessent and that tutored guys like Druckenmiller.
That's a really important distinction and clarification. I mean, even, you know, for some in 2016 who didn't initially support Donald Trump or who were very skeptical by saying, you know, look at all of the things that, you know, he's done in his past. And they kept reiterating that. I mean, one of the things that I said on the media at the time was, you know, all of these things that you're saying are when he was a registered Democrat and people can change. And clearly he has. And, you know, he's running as a conservative Republican now with these types of America First priorities and has clearly, you know, left that. And I think the same is true, Dinesh, for someone like Tulsi Gabbard and even an RFK Jr., you know, who's now, I think he's actually a member of the Libertarian Party, but Tulsi has actually joined the Republican Party because she's seen the extremism from the left. She doesn't at all identify with the Democrat Party and policies. And that's a good thing. And we should applaud and support people's growth, quite frankly, and not say, well, just because, you know, this is the way that you used to be 10 years ago, that you can't change. And perhaps the same is true for Trump's Surgeon General pick as well, that, you know, she was initially, Jeanette Nishwa, she initially was talking about, you know, masking, vaxxing, that kind of thing. And then in more recent clips has backed away from that. And I think that a lot of people, when they learned more about what was really going on with COVID, their information changed their mind and their worldview. And we should understand that that's common process.
Yes. With regard to, you know, Bessent, the guy we started by talking about, a good analogy would be something like this. You know, the famous left-wing writer Noam Chomsky, right? Noam Chomsky made his reputation early, many, many years ago, as a linguist, a famous academic philosopher and linguist. Now, someone could study under Chomsky, study philosophy, and then you'd say later, oh my gosh, this guy studied under Chomsky. Yeah, but he didn't study left-wing politics under Chomsky. He studied linguistics and philosophy, you know, the things that made Chomsky's academic reputation. I guess I was making that point about Bessent. He studied money under Soros. He was not part of Soros's political activism or the Soros Foundation or anything like that. Now, with regard to Tulsi Gabbard, I think that this is somebody who truly has evolved. And we've been able to actually watch her evolution. She's been, you know, moving dramatically to the right step by step by step. And for many of these people, the kind of discovery of the police state, the fact that the Democrats are comfortable with ruthless suppression of civil liberties has been the breaking point. I think that's been true with Tulsi Gabbard and also with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. With regard to COVID, I think Trump remains, you know, he remains proud of the fact that he accelerated this vaccine. And I think the issue with the vaccine is simply this, that it was sold on premises different than what it is. If they had come out from the beginning and said, listen, we got a vaccine, it's not going to prevent you from getting COVID or even giving anybody COVID. But guess what? If you get COVID, it could lessen the severity of it, particularly for people who are in vulnerable groups. Had they said that, they could have stood on that and defended it. And there would still have been a debate about it. But on the other hand, Rochelle Walensky and all the others concocted this major fable about it and then backed it up with all these tyrannical measures. You have to take it. We'll fire you if you don't take it. So that kind of stuff has got to be repudiated. And I still have some concerns about the Surgeon General pick because I'm not quite sure if she's given a sufficient account of how she changed her mind or why she changed her mind or what made her change her mind and change her mind about what. But I suppose that stuff will come out in the, you know, in subsequent days and weeks.
I hope so. And I'm with you on that as well, that, you know, I still have some concerns and I, too, would like to know, OK, how and when and why and on what in particular did you change your mind? And is that sufficient or is this something where, you know, Trump is maybe just wanting to not take accountability for some of the COVID, you know, an Operation Warp Speed and all of that. And one of the things that hasn't yet come out really clearly, Dinesh, is also Jeanette Nishwat's sister, Julia, who's now married to Michael Waltz, who is one of Trump's cabinet picks, and she served on the Operation Warp Speed and also in Trump's first administration and was also connected with the World Economic Forum. So, you know, a lot of these things, I think, and connections and just ideology really do need to be explored. But that's what the confirmation hearings in the Senate should be for. So do you think we're going to see those confirmation hearings or is Trump really going to push for recess appointments and we don't, as the American people and voters, get to hear all of the responses to these type of questions?
Well, I think the confirmation hearings are a good idea. I think that with Trump, he had floated the idea of the recess appointments simply as a way to thwart, you know, a complete obstructionism. And so let's say, for example, that McConnell you know, got together with Schumer and they go, oh, let's, you know what, let's just make sure that we block this guy from top to bottom. And let's essentially prevent him from getting his people in there. We'll delay this process by months. I think Trump realized, listen, I've got one term and I've actually got to do things differently from the last time around. I've got to hit the ground running. And so the recess appointments, I think, was floated for that purpose. He might also specifically have been thinking about Matt Gaetz because he does need somebody to go into the DOJ with a bulldozer. I think he had originally selected Gaetz very much for that purpose. Whether Pam Bondi will have the same approach as Gaetz remains to be seen. There are people inside of Florida who probably know her record better than I do. I also think with Trump, he is this time going with people who are, you know, loyalists. I think he's very aware that he got stabbed in the back a lot the last time, including by some people who are very close to him. And people that he just assumed he could trust. I mean, a good example would be General Kelly as chief of staff, where I think Trump thought, well, you know, generals are generals. They don't really have an agenda. You tell them what to do. They're used to taking orders. And so the idea that you'd have somebody like General Kelly who would be, you know, leaking to the media or ultimately, you know, saying bad things about Trump, I think he's very conscious of all that. And he wants to make sure that he doesn't have that the next time around.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And a lot of these selections, including initially Matt Gaetz, but even now Pam Bondi, who has been, you know, friend of his even, you know, well before he ran the first time around, he does want people who will serve his agenda and not go into these offices with their own agenda. I mean, I've said for a long time that he was the most underserved president in his first term just because of all of the drama and all of these people that he had to end up, you know, firing and then trying to find somebody else, you know, while he's dealing with, you know, two impeachments. I mean, the drama was absurd. So hopefully he can minimize that, not care what the leftists say, but can move forward with an America First agenda. But Dinesh D'Souza, thanks so much for dropping by. I always really appreciate your insights and commentary. And you can listen to the Dinesh D'Souza show on Salem Media. And we will be right back to continue talking about Trump's picks when we come back here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we are still talking about the Trump transition and his team and his picks. And so joining me now to give his opinion on all this and more is our good friend Ryan Helfenbein, who is the executive director of the Standing for Freedom Center. So, Ryan, what's your overall view of Trump's cabinet's picks and, you know, this overall focus on the mandate that I think he has clearly been given by the American people?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say this as an evangelical, speaking largely as an evangelical, as a conservative, you know, I'm still relishing the fact that this election turned out the way it did. And I do believe that many of these appointments will reflect a more populist and generally conservative posture in this new administration. That does not mean that every pick is going to be a great pick. There are certainly areas that have caused me some concern. But I think overall, I think that when you consider, you know, everything from DOD to Department of Ed to Department of Justice, you know, there's going to be a whole new leadership, whole new orientation, if you will, around constitutional principles, around this idea of governing in the American way. We went through a whole period, a 4-year period, where the seems like the LGBT movement dominated everything. We saw censorship. We saw parents being targeted by the DOJ. We saw where the CDC, you know, and other agencies went after the press not to, you know, share the truth about COVID. Those types of things have been overturned by the will of the American people and the American electorate. So overall, I'm very grateful, especially going into Thanksgiving, Jenna, that we have a new administration coming in on January 20th, and I look forward to it.
Yeah, amen to that. Absolutely. And I think that that's the right take overall, that we are all, you know, thrilled all of these picks, even if there are some that, you know, individually we think could be better or have some concerns, which we should voice as voters and as citizens responsible for our government and holding our government accountable. Overall, all of them are going to be better than what a Kamala Harris administration would have chosen. And so, you know, overall, we're still in the net positive area for America's future. But with that said, you know, it is a good thing to always critique and review and voice concerns. And do any of these so far highlight for you, Ryan, and for Christians, should they, some significant concern?
I think in the area of the current selection for Surgeon General, I think, and forgive me, Jenna, I cannot remember her name, but
Jeanette Nishwat.
Certainly,
yeah
that's
Jeanette
right.
Nishwat.
That's right. Yes, and she, you know, there have been a number of viral videos that have surfaced. These were interviews given in the past. She was in favor of vaccinating children. She was in favor of double masking. Literally, if you followed Anthony Fauci's playbook, she was going that, you know, she was following that to the letter, to the T. That is a cause for concern. Certainly when you consider the fact that for many Americans, the vote in 2024 was a referendum on how COVID policies essentially wrecked this economy. We printed $9 trillion, shut things down. People lost their job. There was forced vaccinations. You think about people in the medical community that were outspoken against this. You think about folks that veterans who lost their jobs for refusing to get the jab. This is a concern. I would certainly say that's something that needs to be revisited. And certainly, as we saw in the case with Matt Gaetz, nothing is set in stone. Now, he removed himself from that selection as attorney general, but nothing is set in stone. So there's a lot of changes that can still come before the administration takes over in January. I do think that the Pam Bondi thing was a very positive development in all of this. So there's other things that can take place as people are able to offer their feedback. And one thing, Jen, I do a recount that J.D. Vance said, and expecting this to be true, but that the Republican Party will be the party of debate. And so we want to be vociferous. We want to go out there and say, hey, our opinion is we don't like this. If there's something that stinks, we need to speak up and say it loudly. As conservatives, religious conservatives, as evangelicals, we need to speak our hearts and our minds, and not to be afraid of being censored, as in the previous administration.
Yes, and I think that's absolutely the right posture, is to speak up and to encourage the Trump transition team with our collective voices to make the appropriate appointments, and on also on all of the staffing levels as well, and to encourage the transition team also to put in conservative Christians in positions of key roles, and a pro-lifer specifically. And I'm thinking of, HHS, for example, under a Robert F. Kennedy. I mean, while there's so much that I'm excited for him to do and the MAHA movement, we also need to make sure that there are people who understand where the abortion regulation and rules that are within HHS, a lot of that is going to impact families when we're talking about, federal funding for things like Medicare, Medicaid. I mean, all of those things and those rules, there can be some massive good that pro-life appointees could do in some of these key roles. So I think speaking up is absolutely the right posture. And for the last few minutes that I have with you, Ryan, I want to shift gears and also get your opinion on this. World Magazine published this headline: a New Hampshire case focuses on the right to silent protest. When we're talking about, DEI and making sure that we understand as a culture, women are women and men are men, and you can't change, and men shouldn't participate in women's sports. There is a case now where two fathers apparently wore pink wristbands printed with the letters XX representing biological female chromosomes while attending their daughter's soccer game, and the men chose to wear the wristbands according to the lawsuit, supporting women in sports the night that the high school faced off against a team with a male player who identified as a female. And school administrators asked them to leave, even though they weren't the security camera footage didn't show them making any kind of disruption. They just wore these bands in silent protest. So what is the posture of this case and the right of parents in light of the First Amendment to peacefully just silently protest?
It's interesting. There is a case that goes all the way back to 1969. We're on public property, public grounds. By the way, there was a police officer that intervened in this situation and basically said that it was private property. That's not true. That was a taxpayer-funded, zone or area. That's a place that is public property. So the parents had every right to be there. But there is a case that goes all the way back to 1969, which basically says, look, you do have First Amendment protected rights of free speech that include silent protest. And I would even include silent prayer, where you're seeing stuff like that take place in the United Kingdom, where you cannot pray in certain vicinities within the vicinity of an abortion clinic. So I do believe justice will prevail in this case, but it is certainly a cause for concern when you consider two parents, I believe two fathers in this case, who want to declare, you know, their own conscience. They're wearing a bracelet to signify what they believe about male and female gender or male and female sex, biological sex. I'll be honest with you, Jenna, I would have gone further and probably, you know, compelled my daughters to forfeit that game. Versus actually playing a transgender athlete, and other teams are doing that. But in this case, they certainly should not have been dismissed, or rather, there was an order that was placed on them to vacate grounds, and they couldn't come back. So there's a restraining order that was put in place. But I think that's a violation of constitutional rights. And when you consider where we are in this country right now, the fact that more of these cases are coming up rather than less, we have a lot of work to do. First of all, among the conservative movement, we need to encourage our friends and our cohorts, you know, to stand their ground. But there are many others, Jenna, that we share this country with that do not have an affinity for constitutionally protected free speech, religious and conservative values, and they need a lesson in American civics. They do not understand the law, and that includes some folks in law enforcement who do not understand constitutional law, and they have to they've sworn to uphold and defend it. So we do have our work cut out for us when it comes to defending our freedoms.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the case you're talking about is Tinker versus Des Moines, which held that the Constitution protects a non-disruptive free expression on public school grounds. And so it's also known as the substantial disruption test and is still used by courts today. And so the fathers in this case are requesting an injunction against the school saying that they can't attend and basically no trespassing. And this is a matter of a First Amendment and the right to free speech, free expression. And you're absolutely right, Ryan Helfenbein, that this is a continuation of the culture wars that are now being played out in terms of constitutional law. And this is why not just the cabinet picks and the people in the federal government for the executive branch are very important, but this is why the federal judiciary really matters. And if Trump gets Supreme Court appointments this term, those are going to be incredibly important. But all of the federal bench is very important as well. And this is why he has said to the Senate, you know, block all of the lame duck Biden nominees for the remainder of the time that he has in office. Don't continue to appoint any of these leftist judges. In just the last, you know, 2 minutes that we have with you, the federal judiciary, I think, is the most lasting impact from Trump's first term, but it will be, I think, in his second term as well.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, wholeheartedly agree. There are rumors and there is some speculation that in this new term, upcoming term, you know, there might be some retiring conservative justices, perhaps. And I'm not trying to spread any rumors, but, you know, you look at Justice Alito, Justice Thomas, and the age of those justices. It is so important that constitutional originalism remains and it continues. We cannot allow the court to be recaptured for liberalism and allow justices to legislate from the bench. So I do think it's important that in this next term we take serious stock and appraisal of the current makeup of the court, and we think about the longevity. You know, what's the next 20, 30 years look like? And it's so important that we have conservative justices there. And then, of course, at the lower courts, there were over 200 appointments in the previous Trump administration. Many of the cases that we are winning today, and when I say winning, I don't necessarily mean conservative ideological wins. I just mean constitutional wins, upholding, defending the rule of law and the Constitution. Those are wins for all Americans. But we are winning these cases largely because we have constitutional originalist justices and we need to make sure that the integrity of the courts are upheld. So it's critical. It is absolutely critical.
Absolutely. And these are the things that in this week of Thanksgiving, we need to be thankful for what the Lord has done with America for the last 250 years, that we still have the blessings of liberty, and pray for the next, hopefully 250, but at least the next 4 years, that we can continue to uphold the truth and continue to persist in the blessings of liberty. So Ryan Helfenbein, thanks so much for dropping by this morning. You can follow him at rhelfenbein on X, and you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at afr.net.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.